When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
It's the second episode of the Fenway Rundown for this week. My usual co-host, Chris Cotillo, is busy in Cleveland, so we're going to do this one without him, and we think we've got a terrific guest to do that. Terry Francona, former manager of the Red Sox, former longtime manager of the Cleveland Guardians, enjoying retirement, and as always, we're thrilled to be able to talk to Tito. Second episode of the Fenway Rundown podcast this week, and we're pleased to be joined by Terry Francona from Arizona, no stranger to Red Sox fans, of course, and always welcome in these parts. Tito, how are you?
Good, Sean. How are you? You're a TV star now, man.
Not TV. just digital and online, Tito. That's enough. People have seen enough of me on TV. this is your first major league season with no real involvement in the game in better than 40 years. The 1 year that you weren't in uniform or actually working for a team, you're working as a broadcaster around those games. That was in 2012, in between your stops at Boston and then Cleveland. What has the first month of the 24 season been like for you without being in the ballpark, in uniform, in dugout, working for somebody?
You know, Sean, it hasn't been, I think, what people expected. You know, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what parts of the game I'll miss. And that's okay. I mean, after, like you said, 40 years, you should miss something, or my goodness, but I think I was ready for it. That's the thing. I don't know if people understand it. You know, all the things I think that go into maybe making you a productive manager, it was becoming harder and harder. And I didn't want to overstay my welcome and didn't want to be the old guy that was kind of bitter, you know, things like that. So I thought the timing was actually pretty good. And as we get into it, you know, if there's things I really miss, there's probably ways to stay busy enough without overdoing it.
Does the itch come to you at 7:10 each night that, you know, where you look at your watch and say, I should be in the dugout, I should be making out the lineup card, I should be doing something right now? Do you, it's like you hear people who lose a limb feel that limb months after it's gone. Are you experiencing that competitive itch at game time?
John, I think I'm closer to the second one, the losing the limb part. No, you know what? I mean, I certainly keep an eye on what the guys are doing. You know, I have a text from somebody or something. And, you know, what I've been catching myself doing is putting on the baseball package, seeing what game is close, and then watching the last couple innings. And I've really enjoyed it. But no, I don't have that itch. And, you know I talked to you last year. I thought it through pretty thoroughly. Like I was ready for this, and I think maybe it surprised people, but I was ready to to maybe not be quite as busy.
Is there, have you found something else to, I know you've been golfing a lot. Have you found something else to sort of channel those competitive juices that no longer go into managing?
Well, I mean, I'm working through that. Like you say, I've been golfing. The more I play, the worse I get, which is not a good trend. But I've been healthy enough where I can swim, which I love doing. I'm going to Hawaii next week with my golf buddies. You know, I couldn't do that in May or the end of April, you know. So I'm looking for, you know what, Sean? I don't know what's on the horizon, but it doesn't scare me. Like, I'm okay with not knowing. And like I said, if I wake up some morning and I'm like, oh, man, you know, well, we'll try to figure it out.
You said you had the baseball package at home and you pick a close game and focus. Do you still have, are you still interested in seeing how the Guardians are doing? Are you watching them more than others? Are you in touch with Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff and some of the people there?
I mean, I definitely keep an eye on them more than anybody else. One, I'm still employed. Technically, I'm not sure exactly what I do, but
the check keeps coming.
Let's hope so. You know, just 11 years in a place, you know, and I left on such good terms, and you know, they're friends of mine, and they're actually doing great now that they have some leadership in place. They're actually doing pretty good. So I'm really happy. I mean, you know, 11 years, and it's like, you know, being with like Sandy Alomar and Carl Willis. I want those guys to do nothing but great.
What have you noticed about Stephen Vogt, a rookie manager who steps in and has the Guardians with the best record in the American League as we record this? It's never easy stepping into that job for the first time, as you recall from your time in Philly. And he came in and replaced a guy that had been enormously successful and was popular. What have you seen from the job he's done in the first month?
Well, and again, I haven't talked to him a ton, but I have talked to him, and I see what everybody's talking about. You know, he's real at ease in his own skin. He doesn't take himself too serious. I think he has a lot of qualities that should help him be a very successful manager. I mean, we all know it comes down to, you know, you got to better have some pitching and some players. But I do think his personality bodes well for him to be successful.
Chris Antonetti was in Boston with the Guardians over the last homestand. He talked about the sort of exhaustive vetting that they did with Vogt, getting to know him, starting from scratch, marathon interviews. Were you involved in the process at all, or did they sound you out on maybe what to look for or questions to ask?
You know, Sean, in the middle of August, when I told him how I felt and I was going to step down, I told Chris and Cherney right off, I said, hey, guys, I said, I've had the best 11 years here. I said, I'm not leaving on bad terms. Go find your next manager and start now. And you don't have to tiptoe around me. And so I think it gave him a little bit of like a 6-week heads up where they could start, you know, looking at names and stuff. And I didn't, and they would keep me abreast of what's going on just because I cared. But I didn't think it was right for me to put my 2 cents in. I mean, this was their manager moving forward, not who I think should be there. Because, you know, again, I don't know that that's fair to them. So I just kind of stayed out of it.
You are still under contract with the Guardians, still figuring out, I guess, what that means and what that might entail going forward. What would you like to do? Would you like to, you know, tour affiliates and see some of the prospects? Would you like to do some major league scouting for them? What's in your near future in terms of your continued role with the Guardians?
I told Chris the other day, I said, if you ever have somebody, you know, you want me to go look at, you know, just give me a holler and I'd be happy to. But I definitely want to go see some of the minor league affiliates. I've always enjoyed that side of it anyway. So as I come back east, you know, in May and June, I'll tie in trips to whether it's Columbus or Akron or, you know, wherever, because I know I'll really enjoy that.
Have you definitively, this may seem like an odd question since you're some, you know, 6 or 7 months into retirement from the dugout, have you definitively shut the door on managing again, Tito?
You know, Sean, I'm not sure if I have a great answer for that. I mean, I retired with the idea that I was retiring. I mean, I don't know if I'd ever say never, just because I don't know that that makes a whole lot of sense, but that's not the plan. I mean, the plan is, you know, I retired and try to remind myself of things that were getting hard for me, because it's easy when you're away and you're not busy and you feel good and you go, oh man, I could do this. I you got to be all in. And it was becoming harder for me to be all in.
How about another role that maybe isn't as physically demanding, something in the front office, a GM job, a president of baseball operations? Would you be willing to tackle something like that down the road?
You know, something like that sounds really fun. I will say, I don't think I am, with my second semester freshman education, I don't think I'm qualified for something like that, especially in today's game with, you know, the way finances are and things like that. But like I said, I don't know, like I don't know what the future holds. I don't want to just do nothing, but we'll see. And again, somebody has to think you're worthy, or, you know, they want your help, but we'll see what happens and kind of keep all those options open.
We talked about the great start the Guardians are off to in 24 under a rookie manager. Watching the games that you do on the package, what else has stuck out or maybe surprised you in either league through the first 3-4 weeks of the season?
Well, like we were kind of chatting before we got on here, the amount of injuries, I don't know if it's because I'm watching the whole league now and not just who we're going to play next. Just seems like they're the pitchers with the elbow and the shoulder, and the position players with the obliques, and just seems like guys are getting hurt a lot. And like you said, it's a lot of guys that maybe didn't have full spring trainings. I know guys gripe and groan about the length of spring training, but whoever figured it out had a pretty good idea what they were doing.
Yeah, it seems like so many guys that were late to sign are paying the price in terms of either performance or injuries, or sometimes both. Blake Snell did not pitch well for 3 starts and is now got an adductor strain, is going to miss some time. Same Cody Bellinger, not performing particularly well, and now a fractured rib that's going to keep him out. I don't know if that's going to serve as a pause for players next year when they think about digging their heels in contract negotiations and remember what happened to some of these, but it's certainly been eye-opening the first few weeks to see some of these guys really struggle.
Yeah, you know, Sean, I was wondering about that, like in the middle of March when these guys weren't signed. I remember thinking, man, this is going to be a rush. And I don't mean this disrespectfully, but sometimes you get a player more in name only. You know, every player has to get ready for a season. And when you shortcut that a little bit, like you just said, either it affects your health or your production, and sometimes both. And that's what we're seeing.
You were recently back in Boston to take part in the 20th anniversary of the 2004 season. I know that team obviously holds a big place in your heart. What was it like coming back? I know that you weren't able to stay for the on-field ceremony the next day, but what was it like, you know, going out with some of those guys, seeing some faces, connecting with former players, some of whom you probably haven't seen in a while?
You know what, Sean, it's amazing how when you haven't seen those guys and then somebody walks into a room, it just, and then even like this past weekend, I was in Dallas playing in a golf tournament and Millar was there. And Lester was there, and I played with Clay Buchholz one day. I mean, that is like a highlight for me. I mean, these were guys, you know, Buchholz was a kid, same with Lester. And now to see them, you know, 20 years later, it's really fun.
When you think back to that 2004 team, there were some, shall we say, unique personalities that you had to deal with, some star players, some unique personalities who were more role guys. When you look back to the chemistry that team developed, and I know that one thing that both players and front office people always salute you for is that you allowed players to be themselves. Was that particularly hard to do with that crew? Because allowing some of those guys to be themselves could could open you up to some trouble. But what was special about that team that allowed it to overcome what it did in October, that allowed it to achieve what no Red Sox team had done in almost 90 years?
You know, Sean, it was such a special group. And you're right, man. There were some personalities and, you know, there was some, you know, I mean, we've laughed over the years. I went home with a headache some nights, you know, I admit that. But once they got rolling and they got on the field, it got pretty special. I thought I give Theo a lot of credit, you know, with the trade deadline, making us better defensively or allowing us to get to points in the game where we could do both, really changed the dynamic of our team. And once we got rolling, man, it was fun.
Did that team kind of go to a next level in October? Was there something that shifted? I mean, you had a good season. You got in as a wild card that year in 2004 behind the Yankees, but it seemed like the team took its play to the next level in the postseason. Could you sense that? Maybe not when you get down 3-0, obviously, in the ALCS, but did you sense anything shift in October?
You know, Sean, the game is so finicky, I guess is the right word. I mean, I think we finished 41-11, something like that, to end, you know, the last 50, 60 games. You know, then we sweep the Angels, and then, you know, we down 3-0 to the Yankees, and then we never lost another game. So other than those three games, it was a pretty good 2 months. But in our game, as you know, you have one bad 3 or 4 day stretch, it can end your season. And we're fortunate that it didn't, because I don't care who you're playing, man. It's hard to win 4 in a row, let alone a team like the Yankees.
Was there a point during the regular season? I know I asked you this when you were in town. It, you know, people tend to point to the A-Rod Veritek game as maybe something that got you over a hump or motivated you. But as you pointed out when I asked you, you weren't playing particularly well at that point. So didn't seem like that was a turning point. But was there another one?
Well, I mean, the trade deadline is an easy kind of, you know, but we really, you know, the next week or 10 days, we really didn't kick it into gear. But once we did, you know, once the pieces started to fit, you know, we'd allow our offense to score, and then we could put some guys into the pinch run or going for defense. So we were able to cover everything. And, you know, the other thing is you look back, our 5 starters made every start that year. I don't think that happens very often.
No, certainly not in today's game. Yes. Where, you know, nobody gets to 180 innings, never mind 200 or 220, the way some of your guys did that year. How different, both in terms of managing the personalities, the talent and everything, how different were the two championship teams, 04 and 07, in your mind?
Like night and day. I mean, the one thing that was in common was how they played the game, but it was a completely, you know, it was the younger group. And it was, you know, Ellsbury, Pedroia, and then like Mike Lowell, and much the decibel level in the clubhouse was a lot lower. But also, you know, and you've heard me say this, you got to be true to yourself. So if that team would have tried to emulate the 04 team, it wouldn't have worked, because they were different guys. But it was every bit as rewarding. Just anytime you win, I don't care where you are, whether it's college or double A, when you win, man, it's the best.
The gathering of the 24 team, 2004 team, was not without its losses. Tragically, Dave McCarty, who passed away just 10 days after appearing there, left us. And of course, a great deal of focus on the absence of Tim Wakefield. What sort of remembrances did you share with the guys when you were here, you know, and his name came up, and then more recently when you got together to golf with a few guys who had played with him?
You know, they did a real nice thing at the golf event the other day. Anybody that was associated with Boston and the Red Sox, we did a moment of silence. We spoke about him. We hit a ball, a memorial ball off the tee for him. But it kind of felt like he got kicked in the stomach. I mean, you know, the best way I think I can describe Wake to people that don't know him would be game 3 of the Yankee series, where we're down, you know, like by a touchdown and a field goal, and he's supposed to start the next day. And here he comes up the steps. He's got his spikes on. And he goes, I'm heading out to the bullpen. And I mean, you know, when you really think about it, he's got a chance to start game four, biggest game of his life, and he sacrifices it so we have a chance to win. That speaks volumes about somebody.
There was also a lot of talk about how much of a leader Wakefield grew into in his time in Boston, helping you kind of police the clubhouse, teach the younger guys how to be major leaguers, how to be professionals. How much did he help your job in that role?
You know, from talking to Wake, and it's really interesting, like the evolution, because I think when he came up in Pittsburgh, there was a lot of things. You know, he was an infielder, then he turned knuckleballer. And I think some of the guys in Pittsburgh were pretty tough on him when he was young. So I think he had to kind of grow into a comfort with himself first. And then once he did that, and once he knew he belonged, he was that veteran in the clubhouse that could be the voice of reason, or you could go to and say, hey, man, clean this up. Yeah, you know, I'm on it. You know, it was just really, really helpful.
And that kind of thing is invaluable for a manager to have kind of a liaison, somebody that can be a go-between between you and the coaching staff and the players, and to have a guy with the right perspective and the right touch. Because some of the younger players on that team said he could ride young players pretty hard when they got out of line or when they did something that he didn't approve of, but they knew it was kind of a tough love from him and that he was doing it in the best interests of the team.
Yeah, Sean, you make a good point. You know, if you're the manager or coach and you do too much, you're considered over-managing or panicking. If a player does it, they're considered a good teammate. So the more good stuff you can get from players, the better off you are.
You talked about your golf game, playing with Lester and Millar and Clemens and Derek Lowe and some others. And some of those guys are pretty good players. With more time on the links, how is your game coming along?
John, my game is going south in a hurry. You know, I played 18 holes with Clay Buchholz the other day, and I barely even got to talk to him because he was 50 yards ahead of me the whole day. But you know what? It's fun, and I love it. I tease everybody here. I said every year I come back, I have to hit one more club. I'm running out of clubs, so I got to figure something out here.
I know that you also busied yourself in particular in February and March following your alma mater's basketball team around the conference tournament and then the Field of 64, University of Arizona. What was that like for you to kind of become a fan, have some distance from it, but have a rooting interest in seeing how your old school was doing?
I mean, you know, you've talked to me enough. You know how much I love it. I mean, I love Tommy Lloyd. I think he's one of the best. They're fun. And when they lose, yeah, it kills me. I mean, I drove over to L.A. to watch them play and had to drive right back because they lost. But they recruit good kids, and they're really fun to watch. And, like, I try to – my schedule, man, I look at where they're playing, and I try to make sure I'm in town because I love those games. It's my favorite thing in town.
I heard that he was inviting you into some practices and that you addressed the team a couple of times. And what was that like, switching sports and dealing with basketball players instead of baseball players?
Well, they're such good kids that it kind of made it fun. And I tried to be real careful that I wasn't the old guy that just talked and talked. But Tommy is so open and he likes, you know, getting opinions. And like, he came to Cleveland last year for a couple of days. In fact, he came to Cleveland because he said, I want to watch how you do things before you retire. The first night there, we got beat so bad, we had to have our backup catcher pitch the last four innings. So I was like, hey, did you learn anything tonight? But we sat there till probably 3 a.m, me, him, and about 3 of the coaches. And we drank the beer in my refrigerator and we knocked out all the problems in our sport and in the world, and it was fun.
I remember talking to you years ago, and we were maybe looking ahead to what you were going to do in retirement, and you made a confession to me that I had a hard time believing. Maybe it's because of my interest in music, but you said you had never been to a concert. Is that still the case?
Well, I mean, I had been to like a couple in high school, So, truth be told, let's see. I went and saw an Elton John concert. I think it was my second year in Montreal, so that'd be like 1982. During the year, you saw me, and I mean, it was baseball, and I'm not complaining about it. I got to the ballpark absurdly early. I loved it. I loved getting in my underwear, playing cribbage, putting a chew in. I mean, that was the life I chose, and I'm not complaining about it. But I missed out on a lot of stuff. Now, I can't see me going to a concert here in the next week or so, but it's just the idea that you can. Like, I found myself, I'll get on my phone and I'll see like a beach somewhere, and I'll be like, well, I could do that. Not that I'm gonna, but the fact that I can actually feels kind of good.
Well, I have a suggestion for you to solve this long-running issue that you have.
Oh boy.
On New Year's Eve at the TD Garden here in Boston, Aerosmith is playing, and I know you reference them as a band that you would like to see. So I'm going to suggest that you call your daughter, arrange for some grandchildren time. And come up to Boston and see Aerosmith at the Garden on New Year's Eve and get off the schneid for concert going.
John, if I try to take my
Well,
grandkids
no,
to
I'm not saying take them.
Aerosmith, my
See them while you're here and then, go with whoever you want. But this is an opportunity to come see them around the holidays.
daughter. Okay.
Check a box, and finally go see a band that you want to see.
Well, my daughter asked me a couple weeks ago. She wanted to know if I wanted to go to London and see Taylor Swift with my granddaughter. And I was like, no and no.
That sounds a little ambitious. Well, in any event, Tito, the invitation stands. I think you'd have a lot of fun. You work in a holiday visit with the grandchildren and get a night out and check something off and cross something off your list to do. But whether you show up or not, we appreciate your time. Always good catching up with you. Thanks for being on with us today.
Oh, Sean, I enjoyed the heck out of it, man. Good seeing you as always, and I'll see you somewhere down the road.
Sounds good, Tito.
See you, man.
Our thanks again to Terry Francona for joining us on the Fenway Rundown. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you enjoy all the episodes. Hope you keep up to date with all the coverage online on masslive.com and, of course, through the Red Sox Insider Text Program, which you can join by texting the word join 617-751-6257. Then click the link to subscribe. You get a 14-day trial period, and after that, it's $4.99 per month. You can ask us questions, keep up on all Red Sox news, and supply questions for future mailbag episodes.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.